Okay, today we're going to speak about Hilchot Kiddush on Shabbat. Okay? God once said, Zechorot Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Okay? Remember, or commemorate, we'll soon see, the Shabbat in order to sanctify it. The Rambam in Hilchot Shabbat, Perek Kaf Tet, says the following. Mitzvah Rasei Min HaTorah L'Kadesh Et HaShabbat. L'Kadesh Et HaShabbat B'Dvarim. It's a mitzvah Rasei to be Mekadesh Shabbat, even though we know that Shabbat is Kadosh in itself. Yeah, right, there's a kiyum of somehow sanctifying or adding sanctity to the Shabbat verbally. Shenema Zechot Yom HaShabbat L'Kadesho. Kilomar Zechrehu Zechirat Shevach V'Kiddush. You have to commemorate or mention it as Shabbat enters, as it exits. B'knisato b'kiddush hayom u'b'yitziyato b'havdalah. Okay, so it's mashma from the Rambam that havdalah is also d'oraita, was part of the same kiyum of zochorot yom haShabbat l'kadsho. Although the fact of the matter is that havdalah is a machlok rishonim. Whether it's considered deraita or not, I'm not going to go into it right now. So Kiddush on the night of Shabbat is min haTorah. There's an interesting discussion among the Achronim. If people go to shul at night and daven Maariv and they say Vayechulu HaShamayim, so they are commemorating the fact that the Shabbat is entering. And if they therefore discharge their responsibility, their chiyuv, on a deraita level, when they come home, and let's just assume for a moment that, let's say as an example, some member of the family didn't go on Friday night, like their wives, so how could a person who's no longer chayiv in deraita be motzi in the mitzvah, a person who's chayiv in deraita? Okay, that's a discussion in the Achronim. The Mishnah Berurah is Eitzah, is that a person should have negative kavana when it says vayichulu on Friday night in shul. In other words, to realize that he's not trying to be yotze and mitzvah deraita right now, but he wants to be yotze and mitzvah deraita when he gets home. In truth, the fact is that everybody knows when they're saying vayichulu in shul that they're going to be saying kiddush at the table at night. The problem is that not too many people think about whether they're being mekayim mitzvah or not being mekayim mitzvah. Okay, but I guess just having the knowledge and knowing that you want to be multi people that are chayiv on a deraita level is type of a negative kavana, even if it's not a conscious negative kavana. Yes?
So for those of us in a family, say children, who are not going to shul but and coming home for another kiddush, but you know aren't going to be making kiddush for anybody, is there a preference for which...
Yeah, I think a person should have kavana to be mekayim the mitzvah deraita at the Shabbos table. Okay. Yes.
Why is it even a problem? I thought you said the mitzvah with the deraita was to.
According to some dayot, no, but the women don't even say vayichulu. They never even enunciate the words vayichulu. They just hear it from the mekadesh. And according to some dayot, if the mekadesh already discharges people, so his chiyuv is not on a deraita level, he shouldn't be motzei a person who has a chiyuv on a deraita level. And the women are just going to answer amen. And by answering amen, they want to be yotzei. Now, in truth, besides the fact that you have to have negative kona on top of it, the fact that they answer amen, yet there's a concept of shomea ka'one, and it's really, if they answer amen, it's as though they said it. But if they wouldn't answer amen, it would be a little bit more complicated. Yes, Michael, what?
Is the issue of kiddush or shulness?
Hmm? What?
Is the issue of kiddush or where you're saying vayichulu without bracha?
It doesn't make a difference. No. Min haTorah, just saying vayichulu without the kos. Chazal decided to be kovei ala kos. In other words, it's not a din d'oraita of kiddush ala kos. D'oraita is just to say vayichulu, to use words to commemorate or to recognize the fact that now it's Shabbat. Chazal will koveya that you should do it ala kos. Later on, they instituted the minhag of saying vayechu in shul, etc. Okay. Even though it's a mitzvah rasheshes mangroma, when you're talking about mitzvah Shabbat, so because of the limud of shamor v'zachor, the fact that the in Asara Dibur Kadosh Baruch Hu uttered the word shamor and zachor in the Dibur Echad in one utterance, from there Chazal learn that when it comes to positive mitzvah rasei, so women are just as mechuyavot as men, you know, so they have the chiyuv of the raita, even though it is a mitzvah rasheshes mangroma. Okay. Let's talk about the size of a kos that you should be using for kiddush. So Chazal say that the kos has to be a revi'a talog. How much is a revi'a talog, you might ask? 1.5 beitzim. How much is 1.5 beitzim, you might ask? 1.5 eggs. Okay, I think I mentioned already in the shiur. I think I mentioned the shiur when we spoke about Esro, right? That there's a machoket poskim between Reb Chaim Noah, who represents the more traditional, the more accepted shiur of 137 milliliters, and the Chazon Ish, who felt that it was 150 milliliters. And I think I explained that the Chazon Ish's 150 milliliters wasn't invented by the Chazon Ish. It was really from the Noda Behuda, and even Noda Behuda wasn't really Noda Behuda, it was really the Rivash that discovered that there's a steer between the Sugyot and basically decided to follow the higher shear of, you know, the greater amount of the two Sugyot, the two Shitot. Did I explain how it has to do with fingers? Did I tell you my finger Chiddush? It's not really my finger Chiddush. I told it to you already? Okay. No, not the rule of thumb, but how to measure an etzba. I pointed out. Huh? Most people look at it and say an etzba. There's a Gemara that says that a revius is 2.7 etzba by 2.7 etzba by 2.7 etzba. In other words, 2.7 etzba cubed. An etzba, most understand, is the length from here to here, or the width of a thumb. Okay? And if you measure your thumb, let's say by going across a ruler, better to use metric. It's easy to use metric. And let's say you do 10 of them, and then you divide by 10 in order to get a more exact reading of how wide your thumb is. You will find, if you multiply that thumb width by 2.7 cubed, you will come to something close to 150 cubic centimeters. Okay? I don't know if any of you out there is trying this right now. But, and then you get to about 150, and then you have a steer in the sugyo. However, it was discovered by some dude that was somehow saw these old-time artisans in Italy measuring, instead of using, you know, like a ruler or a slide, whatever, they were actually using their fingers to measure, that they measured, let me try to show you like this, instead of measuring like this, okay, they walk their thumbs across like this. Got it? You know, there's across the surface, and they did it quite quickly. They're very good at going really quickly. They go, and all of a sudden they count 20 at 12 like that. But the point is, when you do that, and you walk across, then the sugyas come out to be even. Okay? In the lesser shear. Okay, so the Rov Poskim, the Rov Deo, which is Reb Chaim Noah, which is 137 milliliters or cc's, makes sense according to that answer. I also saw what? 137. 137. Just to get an idea, is there any plastic cup here? Oh, give me that. Give me that cup in the back. No, not that cup. That cup, yeah. So one of these cups, if you hold up this cup, one of those cups, my guess, is about a little bit over 200 cc's, or 200 milliliters. A little bit over 200 milliliters. The clear plastic ones that you find are prevalent are either 180 or 200, depending on the particular brand. Okay, 180 or 200. Just to give you an idea of what you're talking about, what 150 is, Okay, three quarters of that 137 is a little bit less than that. So what some people do is they say, look, on a coast that I use that has to do with the mitzvah d'oraita, so I'll be machmir like the Chazon Ish. Okay, and the Chazon Ish, by the way, came out with a very interesting war. He said, even if the Nodi Yehuda was wrong, the Nodi Yehuda was like the Godel Ador, and he was like has a din of like of a betin being koveya shiurim, and therefore midiraisa, he's right, even if he's wrong in understanding the sugya, because betin has the power of being koveya standards of shiurim. That was another comment that the Chazon Ish made. However, I saw once in a comment, a letter from a comment of the Chazon Ish, that the Chazon Ish didn't really believe in his shiur. He was machmir in his shiur, but he didn't feel mikra din that was the correct shiur. He really understood that mikra din that it was 137. Okay. Nonetheless, you know, the shiur Chazon Ish has become very, very popular today. So what some people do is they say that on shiurim, that on things that have to do with the writer, like Kiddush Friday night or Havdalah, they'll use a kos that's the size of a shiur Chazon Ish, but things like Kiddush in the day, okay, or what's called Kiddush Rabbah, a euphemism, that's clearly a Drabbanan, and that they'll use 137 cc's. Okay? Yeah?
When we say a kos this size, we mean also that much liquid inside of it?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Do you need to drink that much or have that much in your cup?
No. You don't have to drink that much. You have to just drink a te'ima in the Lashon of the Gemara. Okay? Since you asked, I'll tell you a little story. You have to drink a te'ima. Rov Rishonim say, the Gemara Pesachim says, a te'ima, te'ima ba'al mi'ima. Rov Rishonim explain that a te'ima is a mali lugmav. You know what a mali lugmav is? A mali lugmav is when you fill one cheek with liquid. Not two cheeks, but one cheek, or half of two is the most accurate. You take, each person has their own mali lugmav. You take water, and you start to drink, you filled up both cheeks with the water, you spit it out into a cup, and nobody's looking, okay, and then you divide the amount by two. You measure how much you have, and divide by two, and that's your mali lugmav. I think most people, it's something like 35 to 40 cc's, more or less, around that area, I think that's more or less a mali lugmav. That's all you have to drink, a mali lugmav. I'm not talking about kosar on the night of Pesach. In the night of Pesach, so there are some Yishonim that hold you have to drink rov kos. It's a din in the kos, and not but here by Kiddush, it's a din of te'ima. The ikur kiyum is to hold up the kos and to pronounce the Kiddush and Shabbos. Now, what's that have to do with anything? Why is holding up a kos significant? Why does that sanctify anything? How does it work? What's the svara of holding up a kos when you say Kiddush? So I also didn't know, and I had a lot of sfeikot about it until like 15 years ago. Newsweek magazine had an advertising section on the greatest bars of Europe. Okay, and it was an excuse to sell, you know, to have ads for whiskey and wines and things like that. But they voted on the greatest bars in Europe. And as a filler, in between all the whiskey and wine ads, they had these little mini articles. And one of the articles, the title of the article was, what is the source, or the earliest source, of a toast? And this article claims that the earliest source of a toast is the Jewish tradition of Kiddush. And I said, that's the story. That's what Kiddush really is. Now, why, when people propose a toast, like they say, to the queen, and they hold up their coast, why is it so important to hold up a coast? So I think it's like holding up a davar chashuv. You might want to say, like, maybe it's like Avram Avinu when he wanted to be Mashpia Eliezer, so, you know, Simna Yodcha Tachad Yerechi. The thing that was the holiest thing was Brit Mila, so they wanted to, you know, focus on a Dover Kadosh. I think that wine is a Dover Chashuv. You know, as a coast, the wine is a Dover Chashuv. And if you want to draw attention to the people in the room to something that's verbal, that's not concrete. You want people to focus, so you have to have some kind of a chefs, or some kind of an object, some kind of a visual aid. That it shouldn't just be audio, but it should be visual, so you hold up something of importance to get attention, to your attention, so to speak, to your words. So you hold up the kolos and you make kiddush. That's my theory. Yes?
No, you just say that you're holding it up to show that you're drinking it and that it's connected to the kiddush.
No, but what do you need it for? What do you need yayin for?
No, because you need yayin because it like...
And what about a brit milah? What do you use a kolos here?
Isn't there a whole thing that the wine, like, because it, like, affects your mind, so, like, you... Like, the Sefer Rufino says this or something, that... Because it affects your mind, so you connect it to the
world. Clearly a name dropper. Wine affects your mind. In other words, what you're saying is that you're basically drugging your mind into a higher state of awareness by drinking alcohol. I'll believe that when I see it. You show me.
I'll show you.
But anyway, I think that's a story. I think that's a story. You're holding up a Devar Chashuv. Now, so the question was so you hold up a Devar Chashuv, so you could ask the question, okay, so you held up a Devar Chashuv, so you make a Kiddush, you put it down. Why do you have to drink it? Where is the connection between, why does it have to be myself drinking? So, I heard in the name of the Rav Zatzal that really, you don't. It's just that to put it down is like being mezalzel in this kos after you kind of used it. You use it and lose it, you just put it down. So you don't want to put it down, so you make a bari pagaf and you drink it. That's the understanding. Now, so the Gemara Mesachim says, Tima ba'alma, most Rishonim say that you have to drink a mali lukma because that's called a Tima ba'alma. When I first came to Yeshiva Haratzion many, many years ago, I was very suspicious about the place, generally speaking. Number one, that the Rosh Hashiva didn't have a beard. Okay? I was coming from a very yeshivish yeshiva, and we had learned all that. I mean, we basically finished Mishnah Berurah in high school, and I noticed that Rav Lichtenstein, when he made Kiddush and Havdalah, just put his lips to the surface and drank about a little bit more wine than Eliyahu HaNavi does on Pesach night. And I was aghast. I couldn't believe it. In other words, he was being motzi every the whole entire yeshiva like that. I just couldn't believe it. So I went to him and I asked him, you know, what's the deal? In just so many words. So he says, well, you know, I believe, the Gemara says, Tima Balma, I believe that that's, Tim Balma. So I said, yeah, but what about the Shulchan Aruch? But the Shulchan Aruch says, go look in the Gemara Pesachim and this and that, look at the Rishon and then come back. So I went, I did my homework, I looked at the different things, I came back to him and I said, okay, you know, I looked at the different things and they all seem to say that you have to drink a Mali Lukma. So he says, well, did you see the Meiri? So I said, no. So he says, go see the Meiri. So I went to see the Meiri. Came back and I said, okay, so the Meiri says Tima Ba'alma Mamash, right? But it's only the Meiri. By this point, he was very, very upset with me, okay? Because I was like badgering him. And he said to me, well, I think I have the right to pass like the Meiri. And that was like, I thought I was going to pack my bags and leave Yeshiva right then and there. I was Makar Baruch Hashem, I was mature enough to to wait a little bit longer. And I realized what a gadol he really was, and that if that's what he wants to do, that he could do. There was another friend I had in yeshiva. Took me a while, but I made a friend. And I told her, I shared this with him, and when he heard this, he took it, he watched for Lichtenstein, and he saw it was true, that he really didn't drink that much at all. And so then he started to fill up his own kos, like to take the yeshiva wine, Masoret wine, which is real Masoret Nefesh, and fill it to the top. He filled it to the top, and while Lichtenstein would be making Kiddush, he making Kiddush along and made his own Kiddush. And then I said to him, he's the Rosh Yeshiva. Don't you think it's like Geneva to take so much wine for yourself just because you're not being Sumach on the Rosh Yeshiva? So he says, you're right. So next week he went and bought his own bottle of wine and And he did. I said to him, listen, he's a Rosh Hashiva. Don't you think a little bit of chutzpah, like right there in the lunchroom to make Kiddush because you're not so much on Rosh Hashiva? So he said, no, you're right. Next week he brought two little challahs and made Kiddush in his room and ate some challah and bench, and then he came to the lunchroom to eat the regular meal because, you know, whatever. The fact is, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The fact is that today Rav Lichtenstein drinks Mali Lugmar. I don't think it was me that convinced him. It was many, many, many years later that he started to drink Mali Lugmar. Today he drinks Mali Lugmar. But that's the din of Te'ima. If you don't do a Te'ima, but let's say as an example, you make Kiddush and something happens and the wine falls on the floor and spills. So you have to make Kiddush over again. If you don't drink enough, you have to make Kiddush over again, unless you were planning it. Let's say there was a bottle of wine on the table, and you were planning to drink from that wine also with your bracha. Then it's as though you made Kiddush not only on the coast, but somehow also on the wine that's in the bottle. Now another thing is, let's say you use a coast that's less than 137. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. Scan your notes. Wherever you say the 137, erase that. I knew I was wrong. I told you differently on surface. It's 86. 80. It's 86. I'm sorry. 86 is a V'chaim Noah. That's the acceptable Shita. My mistake. Okay? Let's say you use a kos that's less than 86 cc's. An example being one of these little shot glasses. Okay? So then, I'm going to correct myself in a moment, but then, l'chol adeh, you aren't Yosei Kiddush. You aren't Yosei Kiddush. There's a Taz that tries to be Melamed Skud on people that, you know, use whiskey and a little shot glass to be Yosei, and he says, well, maybe there's some kind of a swara that, since it's more concentrated, so it's as though you're drinking a full Revius in that small amount. This is the Taz, you know, just trying to be Melamed. So this is before all the ultra, you know, detergents came out. You have like a super concentrated thing. There's a halacha that it has to be a revius, and that's a halacha. If a person made Kiddush on less than revius, he wasn't Yosei Kiddush, and once again, you should make the Shem Malchus say the Kiddush over again. It's really, really problematic. If you find yourself in a house, you're a guest in someone's house, where the Baal Bayit is using, you know, something that's less than revius, I would tell you to make Kiddush on Mechala, which we'll get to in a moment. And it's also a possibility of making Kiddush on Mechala. Yes?
Does that apply on Shabbos Day also?
It applies on Shabbos Day also. You always need a Revius. You always need a Revius. Yeah?
Oh, no, so you can't use the Taz at all for that. Start to say it. Because, like, a lot of people do it. It doesn't make sense why people do it.
The Taz is a big Melamed Zchus on them, but you shouldn't do it. Yeah.
So in yeshiva, when one person makes Kiddush, how much did you drink if you're pouring for yourself? You have to drink.
You're saying in yeshiva you notice that everybody puts a little bit in their kos.
Right.
I'll get that a little bit later. It's not makev at all. You don't have to drink anything from the wine. You heard the Makadesh, and the Makadesh drank a Mali Lugmar. You yotze. You don't have to drink. Yes, Zach. Huh? Zach.
If you're at someone's house, you make over a shot glass, so not to embarrass everyone, you have in mind that you're including the bottle, or do you not do that?
The whole bottle of whiskey?
No, you're using wine, but it's not a revere, it's a cup. So can you have in mind that you're using the bottle as well, or can you not do that only like...
But if you're making the Kiddush, then yes, but you're not going to make a Kiddush on the shot glass. If they give you a shot glass, you ask for a bigger glass. Yes. If you what?
If you're just pouring 86 cc's, whatever, and you only take a sip of it, especially if you go by the meiri, you only do a tiny bit.
No, I'm telling you, today Rav Lichtenstein drinks more. Right. I wouldn't tell a person not to feel the second sip. To take a drink, Mali Lugmar, that's how Rav Lichtenstein passes
that. Whole cup,
that was just for entertainment value, I told you that story. Not for halacha drama.
Isn't it Baal Tashmi though, if you don't drink the whole, you pour yourself a whole cup.
Well, drink it later.
But
I'll give it to other people.
You don't have to.
That's right. Well, you just backwash it into the bottle. We'll get to it. Which brings me to the next halacha. Yes.
This is also part of Abdallah.
Yes. Yes. Abdallah, you also want the shiur of a kos. Let's talk a little bit about kos pogum. Kos pogum. There could be three different types of kos pogum. One is if someone drank from the wine. Let's say someone took the bottle of wine and drank from the bottle. So all the yayin is pogum. Or if someone, let's say, picked up the kos, shel bracha, before you made a kiddush on it, and took a little sip from it.
What is pogum?
Pogum? Let's translate the word. Pogum would be substandard, blemished. Deficient. Thank you. Okay, a pagam is a blemish. So a kos pogum can come in three forms. One, the yain itself is pogum, and the way to be metakeing the wine, to fix the wine so it's no longer pogum, would be to take fresh wine and to pour it into the kos or pour it into the bottle that somebody drank from. That's the way of being metakeing the wine. What?
How much do you need?
Even the teeny tiniest drop. All right. The second form of kos pogum, if the kos itself is bent. Okay. If the kos itself is bent, it's also considered a kos pogum.
What does that mean, bent?
Bent. Bent. You never saw a silver kos that had a bend in it? No? Okay, someone dropped it on the floor and the kos got bent. Dented. Chipped. Okay. That would also be a din of a kos pogum. And lastly, you could have a kos pogum if the kos is not full. You're supposed to fill up the kos. How full, you might ask. So for Avdala, there's a minog of having it overflow. And some people have a minog, even by kiddush, like as a simon bracha, to have the wine filled past the top, surface tension and all. But probably me'ikar adin, a full kos, would be that no one would think to add, you know, that you need to add more wine to it. Meaning that it's considered full, basically. All right, that's also another example of kos pogum, pointer of haigom. The halach of kos pogum is that b'di'evid yotze, even one of those three b'di'evid yotze, but l'charchila, you should try that it shouldn't be a kos pogum. Okay? Another din by the kos is the din of ituf. Ituf literally means to wrap yourself. In the good old days, ituf with an ayin, in the good old days, formal dress always was to wrap yourself, like our talit nowadays. Okay, I don't know, I call it Middle Eastern garb. But the point was that an outer garment was a more formal garment. You're wearing an outer garment, and that's ituf. So that's how the right, again, literally, l'tatef, or ituf, means to wrap yourself. Nowadays, the modern equivalent would be, let's say, wearing a suit jacket, which are considered more formal, or a sports jacket even, which are considered, you know, more formal than not wearing a jacket. I don't know if there's still fancy restaurants that don't allow people in if they don't have a jacket and tie.
Yes.
But that would, there are?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Kosher ones?
Non-kosher
ones.
Not in England, not kosher. There are shuls that won't give you an aliyah.
Okay, no, but the reason why I quote restaurants is just to show you that there is such a thing as a social norm that has nothing to do with halacha. It's a social norm of being formal, that formal dress is ituf. Okay, you know, to have the outer, to have another layer of coat on is to be more formal as opposed to walking around in shirt sleeves. I don't know, in Congress as an example, if there are any congressmen that sit without their suit jackets on. It's not like the Knesset.
Southern ones.
Huh?
Nobody actually watches
C-SPAN. I'm talking about, you know, that's formal dress. And that is, by the way, the same halacha as far as davening. You know, why do some people wear a jacket when they daven? Some people wear a hat when they daven. That has to do with the din of ituf. Okay, now the Mishnah Berurah and the Magen Avraham, I believe, as well, both point out that has to do with the norms of society. In other words, if you're in a society where wearing a hat is not considered formal wear anymore, And ever since JFK, I think that no longer considered a formal wear in America, at least, to be wearing a hat. So mikra din la halacha, there's no more din of itur because it's not a social norm of being formal, you know, to wear a hat. Okay? Pardon me? So, if a person is mafid on wearing a jacket when he davens Shmona Esrei, so that basically means that his norm, that's what formal dress is, and therefore when he says kiddush, he should also be wearing a jacket, just as well. And the same thing with a hat. If a person's norm is that his formal wear when he goes out, he wears a hat, that is his style, or the style of his society, then he should be wearing a hat for Shmona Esrei, and he should be wearing a hat for when he makes kiddush as well. But if it's not, and he's part of society where it's not considered, you know, the top thing, he'll even go to a wedding, you know, with his shirt out and without a tie and without a jacket. So then there's less point of being makir on itur for these things. Yeah.
Number one, does itur change based upon the day? What I mean by that, like for tefillah, I would wear a polo shirt, but I wouldn't wear a polo shirt on Shabbat. Does that mean that on Shabbat the itur for kiddush would be a
fellowship
for me, or does it change based upon what I normally wear on Shabbat?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'm not sure.
Okay, and secondly, when you said a bent cup, how bent is it? If it has a nick in it, it's pogum, or is it has to be like obviously out of shape?
I don't know. How much is it very difficult, you know, to come to a shear of exactly how much? Someone would notice, noticeably bent, it's better to use a different coat. Yeah.
In terms of kos pogum, I've noticed a lot of people, like, after they make kiddush, they want to save the wine, so they pour it off before they ask and drink some, and then they pour a little from the bottle into their cup, and then pour it back. Does that make it not pogum if you add more wine on top?
If you add more wine to it, it makes it unpogum.
Okay.
Yes?
Is that personal or
societal? If you would be in a society that across the board everybody did that, then...
Let's say I went from Israel to America, or America to Israel. America would never go to a wedding not in a suit, and Israel would never go to a wedding in a suit.
I'm not sure. No, it's a good question. It's a good question. Here's for Wilson to that question if you want. Okay. another halacha that the Gemara that brought down the halacha as well for Kos Chokidush is hadafa. In other words, if someone drank from the kos, or if the kos was used for something else, and then somebody comes in the middle of the meal, they didn't make kiddush yet, you should go rinse out the kos before you do it. It's also a din of kavod for kiddush. You rinse it out properly, and then you drink. An additional halacha is halacha of mizug. Mizug means to dilute the wine properly. The halacha of mizug in the times of the Gemara, times of the Mishnah, times of the Gemara, and for many hundreds of years after that, wine wasn't consumed straight. It was always watered down. Okay? Usually something like one part wine to three parts of water, but it's a machlok, we should be shown as a machlok between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, but I'm just giving you an idea. In other words, you're talking about three parts of water to one part of wine, 25% wine, 75% water, according to many, they would even more diluted than that. They wouldn't drink wine in any other concentrate. Drinking wine in another concentrate would be tantamount to, like, drinking, I don't know, orange juice concentrate directly from the little freezer container, rather than putting water into it. That's how they drank the wine. That was like the norm. I'm aware that the Rashbam in Pesachim says, when the Gemara describes Mizug, and the Rashbam explains that the wine in their time was much, much stronger, trying to explain why is it that they did Mizug, the Rashbam does say that. Scientifically, it's a little bit difficult to accept the Metzius that the wine in the times of the Mishnah or the Gemara was stronger than in the time of the Rashbam, because as a winemaker I could tell you that when the yeast start partying on the sugar that's in the grape juice, so they multiply and they multiply and multiply, and as they're multiplying they're giving off carbon dioxide and alcohol, right? When the alcohol content reached something between 16% and 18%, the yeast basically kill themselves in their own juice. In other words, the alcohol kills the yeast, at least puts them into a suspended state, you know, into a spore state, and it just stops working. You can't get higher than 18% alcohol in wine. You can't, unless you distill it, and distillation was not invented until way after the times of the Gemara. So on an alcohol level, it couldn't have been stronger. Say, okay, maybe it could have been stronger on the sugar level, slightly stronger, but not 5 times stronger. It's not possible. So I'm telling you that most probably the din of mizuz has to do with the norm of how they drink. However, people are makbid on the yom hazeh to add a little bit of water into the wine to be makayim the kiyum of mizuz, even though we kind of drink our wine straight. In other words, without dilution. But there is such a halacha. Specifically, let's get to the wine itself. The Gemara in Psachim quotes the pasuk of Yain ki yit adam, wine which is red. And most Rishonim understand that that's ma'akev. In other words, wine by definition is red, such that white wine is so inferior that it should not be used for Kiddush. Ramban feels the white wine should never be used for Kiddush. I believe the Shulchan Aruch quotes that Ramban as well, just as a daya. Lamaisa, nowadays the white wines that we drink is at a very, very high quality, and I don't think it's short of red wine, but there are many people that are makbid on that din that it should at least be slightly pink in order to make Kiddush on it. Yain mevushal. The Gemara says that a person can take a cluster of grapes, squeeze it into a cup, and make kiddush on it. Meaning, you can make kiddush on grape juice for sure. You can make kiddush on anything lechatchila that is kadosh, that is roi lemizbeach. According to some Rishonim, the din of roi lemizbeach is ma'akev. The Rambam, as an example, holds that if it's not roi l'mizbeach, you can't make kiddush on it. So number one, if it has any type of sugar or fruit flavor added to the wine, according to the Rambam, it's not roi l'mizbeach, because sugar is not mutar l'mizbeach. And number two, if it's mevushal, if it's been boiled, it's not roi l'mizbeach, and a person should not make kiddush on it.
What about water?
L'halacha, pardon me?
Water.
What do you mean water?
They give water on l'mizbeach. In place of wine.
I'm not with you.
What's
that to do with it? You don't put devash or sugar or fruit on the mizbeach.
Right, but you put wine and water.
Yes.
So can you make kiddush on water?
No. No. So we're talking about wine that is royal mizbeach. You can't make it on avocados either. Okay. So there are those that are machmir that they only use yayin that's not mevushal. And they only use yain that they know for sure is not sweetened. Most wine nowadays is not really sweetened, to the exception of the sorit wine that the yeshiva serves. It's possible. They definitely add something to that. And therefore, the people that are machmir in that. There are some people that are machmir in the opposite direction. Like Dafka will only use mevushal because they're worried about the problem of stam yena. Not literally yain nesek midiraita, because you're not talking about real or zara, but if a non-Jew either touches the wine itself or pours the wine, so it has it in the rabbanon of stam yenam, but if it's mevushal, it can't become stam yenam. And therefore, there's some people that prefer only using yain mevushal because they won't get into any halachic questions. As to the definition of yain mevushal, there's a machloket poskim. Very few poskim hold you have to actually bring it to a boil. But there's a machloket between Rav Moshe Feinstein and I think the Demnitziner Rav as to what degree it has to reach in order to be considered yain mevushal, if it's, I don't know, 212 degrees Fahrenheit or something. I don't remember the machoket of the degrees, but there's machoket there. There's also Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal felt that the whole din of yayin levushel is that the yayin itself doesn't taste as good because it was boiled. So that according to him, if you have yayin that's mevushel but it tastes exactly like regular wine, in other words, they know how to do it in a process that's so quick and contained in such a way that the yayin, the taste of the wine has not been affected at all, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal, it's not considered yayin mevushel at all. So according to him, most of the bottles that say yayin mevushel, according to him, really doesn't have a din of yayin mevushel. Yes?
As far as if a goy just touches the bottle but doesn't pour it, or basically touch the wine itself,
It's not stam yayinim if he just touches it.
Does that bottle have to be open for it to be?
If he moves the wine and it's open.
But if it
moves the wine, if it's sealed, then it also doesn't become stam yayinim. Yeah.
Chemical. What's the point of boiling it?
The point?
What's the purpose of boiling? Why would someone boil wine?
Why would anybody boil wine?
Yes.
That one reason would be to stop fermentation. That would be one advantage, to stop the fermentation. But the reason why it was possible in this bath is because once you boil it, the first thing that you lose is the alcohol content, because alcohol has a lower boiling point than water. That's why it's considered inferior. Okay. Some people have the minhag. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Some people have the minhag of standing on Friday night during Kiddush. Some have the minhag of sitting throughout the entire Kiddush on Friday night. And some have the minhag of standing and sitting. Nobody has a minhag of sitting and standing. Okay? How many of you have a minhag of standing the whole time? Raise your hands. Friday night. How many of you have the minhag of sitting the whole time? Okay. And standing and sitting. Okay. Interesting. Now, what's it all about? What's it all about? So, the standing, the reason why you stand is because what you're doing is, it's like edut. You're giving edut that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Shemayim V'aretz, V'yom HaShvi'i Shabbat V'Nafash. It's like an edut, and edim, when they give testimony, they have to stand. That's why some people quote the dubious halacha, but by Vayechulu, you have to say it always together with two people, because it's, Pishtayim edim yakum davar. So therefore, if you miss the Vayechulu, so you ask somebody to say Vayechulu with you. Okay, that's a minhag. I'm not convinced that that's ma'akev. I mean, I personally do it also, but I'm not convinced that it's really ma'akev that you have to specifically have two people. But that's the idea. That's the idea of standing, because you're giving edut. Yes.
This is not what we said before, talking about the different kinds of wine you can use. How come for Havdalah you would see people like using beer?
I'm going to get to that later.
Okay.
I'll get to the other drinks later. Okay, now what's the idea of sitting? The idea of sitting is to create a kviut in your makom. In other words, JJ, can you translate kviut?
Permanency.
Permanency? There's no such a word. Permanency?
Yeah,
but it's not really permanent.
It's
I don't know, some kind of a stability, establishing a fixed, mock on, I don't know. Fixity. Anyways, the advantage of sitting is that you want to be koveya makom or koveya suda, but we'll get to koveya suda a little bit later. You want to be koveya makom when you make kiddush. And therefore, some people therefore sit. The combo thing of that standing and then sitting is trying to basically cover all your bets, or the best of both worlds, and you stand during the Eidos part, and then you sit for the rest of it in order to try to achieve the kviut as well. All right? Yes, Michael.
What about the minhag of standing for kiddush and sitting for drinking, standing for
I think that everybody should sit for the drinking. This way, at least you have the kriya on the drinking. I don't think that people have a dafka market that only have to stand when you drink. Yeah.
Why do we care that we have a kriya for kiddush?
Why is it important?
Yeah.
I think just to give chashivut. I'm going to get to speak a little bit later about kiddush b'makom suda, but that kiddush should be made in a particular makom rather than floating around. Which is relevant as an example if you have it, let's say a kiddush in shul, okay, where people make kiddush standing up in the daytime we're talking about. So first of all, even Makadish, it's really better for him to sit on a chair when he makes kiddush. And it's also mentioned, the Magen Avraham mentions that it's a little bit of a suffix for those people who are walking or milling around and then they hear kiddush from the Makadish and they're not in one spot, whether they could be yotzei from the Makadish when they don't have a kviut makom. Lemaisi says that if people stand still while the Kiddush is made, so they're probably yotze in any case. Okay? Yes, Ellie.
If the one
between
Kiddush is sitting, should you also sit?
I mean, even if your minig is to stand? If I think so. If you're definitely in somebody else's house and they sit, you should do what they do.
Yeah,
that's for a little thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I think we'll stop here. We'll continue Kiddush next week.